plant and food research scientists, Ross Bicknell and Philippa Barrell, are leading a project focused on developing new variants of Pinot Noir grapes to help the wine industry address current and anticipated challenges. To find out more, Cosmo Kentish Barnes is with them at Plant and Food's Trial Vineyard near Lincoln University in Canterbury.
We've been interested in Pinot Noir for a number of years, and it's a really interesting plant. It's been grown for centuries. It's really important to the wine industry, and we felt like it was a really useful plant to be able to study and try and generate new clones of Pinot Noir that we have generated through a process that we have in the laboratory. And this paddock where we're standing was a sheep paddock in 2015, so we set the vineyard up and have been growing plants since then.
And the vines now are about, what, 1 metre 80 high? They're looking really good.
That's right, thank you. Yes, they're mature vines now. You can see here the bird netting has been placed, and that's because we're going to be harvesting next week. We'll start making some wine out of these plants and see whether we've got something new and exciting.
Yes. How did you get involved with this sort of research?
So grapevine genetic research has only been happening at Plant and Food at the Lincoln site for about 10 years. And my colleague Ross here, he started the program, and I thought it was really interesting and asked if I could lend a hand. So that's how I got involved.
Mm. Thank you. And Ross, we had to put on some special little shoes to come into the vineyard.
Yeah, Canterbury is an area where there is some debate, but we suspect that phylloxera, which is a root pest, is actually in Canterbury, but we're really trying not to bring it into the vineyard and certainly not spread it around the vineyard if it's here already. So that's what the boots are for.
How are you undertaking this research? What is your focus?
So with the Pinot population, the conceptual basis of the idea is that, you know, Pinot is a variety, but within the variety there are multiple clones, and each clone has advantages and disadvantages. Growers will choose a clone depending on their conditions and their interests. And so what we're trying to do is generate more clones, more different clones, clones that are more suited to our environment and our needs, and then make those available to the industry so that we can provide more security and diversity in the industry. So when we started this project, it was all about not just making changes, but making them in a way that was found throughout the plant body, and the only way to really achieve that is to start by working with individual plant cells, grape cells, and then growing them up to build full-size plants. So every one of these plants, every 4,000 that we have here, started life as one cell.
Mm. Now tell me about transposons and why they're an important part of this research.
So transposons are they're naturally occurring genetic elements. They occur within the DNA of all organisms, all the way down to bacteria. They jump around. They're known as jumping genes. They actually relocate within the genetic material of their host. And in doing so, they can cause changes in the way that genes are used. So transposons have been instrumental in evolution throughout time. And there's some nice examples around, like nectarines are a transposon-induced change in peaches, so they don't have hairs, for instance. Yeah. And we know in grapes that transposons have generated a lot of changes. You know, most notably, the colour change from red grapes to white grapes is a transposon-induced change. So what we're trying to do is hike in on that process and use it to generate changes that we're interested in specifically.
So just to be clear, you are fast-tracking what is a natural process.
So what we're really doing is selecting from existing variation, things that are already happening out there. And we are looking at ways in which we can make those changes happen a bit faster. So we're using techniques that actually speed the rate of change, but still working within the natural system of how change happens.
What sort of areas do you want to focus on?
So in Pinot, there's a number of issues that the industry have already identified. Continuity of supply of the grapes. Some years you have good years and bad years. We would like to even that out a bit. There's an interest in the colour development of the grape. There's Pinot can have bad years and good years, so that's something else to worry about. Yield is another one that people routinely bring up. They want slightly better yields but with the same quality, and then there would be flavour compounds in there as well. So there's quite a quite a wide range. I suspect what we'll end up doing is generating clones that are good at one thing but not everything. But you can blend, and so that means you could bring in clones that have better colour development if you want to improve the colour in the wine and so on.
So a vineyard in the future might grow a few plant varieties with desirable or resilient traits that they'll be able to blend together into a wine.
Absolutely, that's the plan. Yep. Yeah.
What about climate change? What impact is that having on the direction this programme is taking?
So obviously worldwide the climate has changed, it's getting warmer. And what that means for plants, especially in the grape industry, is that the plants are flowering earlier, and then the ability to grow a crop like you did 50, 100 years ago is harder. So one of the things that can happen is that the flowers on the plants arrive earlier, the so-called bud break. And in Canterbury especially, we have the potential for frosts, and if these frosts happen earlier or later, then the frost will kill the flowers unless you have frost protection. So if we can generate a clone of Pinot Noir that has flowering either earlier or later, according to what industry would prefer, then I think we've got the chance to provide them with a plant that has the potential to be more useful in the context of climate change.
Just add quickly to that the other aspect of climate change is that we're now seeing different diseases and pests coming in that we never saw before. And these are things that are more warm climate adapted. So as things warm up, we're also our challenges are increasing that area as well.
Will this be the first year that you've made different sorts of wine?
Yes, the first year that we've done it at any scale, yes. It's our first attempt at actually, we've chosen plants that we know to be different in our population, and now we're actually going and making wines, and we want to measure how different those wines are. So when we've made the original selections, it's been based on grapes, it's been based on chemistry of the grapes, but wine itself is a different product, and therefore we actually need to look at the wines that are made from those grapes to see whether or not we actually have a plant of value.
So out of these 4,000 different vines here, how many plants have you chosen?
To date, we've chosen 30. We've only actually looked at about a quarter of the population in depth, so about 30 plants have been selected from around about 1,000. I suspect quite strongly that of our 4,000 plants, we may come back with maybe somewhere between 5 and 10 elite selections that we would suggest might be of value.
How challenging was it developing plants that were grown in the lab and getting them to grow successfully here?
Difficult in the sense that it had never been done before, so we were having to, you know, cut the path basically, and we certainly made false starts, and the early years in particular were difficult because we were trying to learn how to grow plants in laboratory conditions when they were very, very small. A single cell is an incredibly small and delicate thing. To keep that alive and to treat it and then to generate an entire plant from it was a very large challenge, and that took us many years. Once that was under control and we were able to scale up, then things got a lot easier.
Well, let's wander over to one of the rows and have a look at the grapes. At the end of the rows, you've got roses.
Oh, this is tradition. In France, in the mid-1800s, there was a disease that broke out in their vineyards called powdery mildew, and it devastated their vines. It caused a tremendous amount of damage and reached the point where, collectively, powdery mildew and a couple of other diseases and pests threatened the entire French industry. It was very likely, within 10 years, the industry would have been completely unviable if they hadn't found a solution. They found the solution in terms of using rootstocks and spraying with sulphur, but while that process was taking place, one of the earlier ideas was to plant roses at the beginning of rows because that would possibly attract the diseases, because they were known to get powdery mildew on roses, and they thought, well, maybe the powdery mildew would prefer to be on the rose. Even if that wasn't true, maybe the powdery mildew on the roses would be an indication that you were in trouble and you needed to do something. So this tradition of growing roses at the beginning of grape rows started with an idea which we've debunked, but now it's decorative. And now if you go through most grape growing areas, you will see roses at the start of rows. Interestingly, only in the position where you can see it from the road, but, you know, that said, that's how it worked. There were a lot of other ideas. They were planting toads under plants and all sorts of things like that to try and get rid of these diseases. We don't do that anymore. But, yeah, the sprays they developed in the 1800s are still in use, actually.
Are there any grapes in this row here that you will be targeting next week?
I think so. To be honest, I haven't got my little list on me. But we will be, in a typical row, we'll be taking about 3 or 4 out of 140. So it's, you know, our interest is only in a fairly small percentage.
Yes. Philippa, tell me what happens as soon as the grapes get harvested. Where do they go?
We'll be taking them up to our winemaker in Blenheim. Actually, we're meeting her halfway. We're going to exchange grapes and kaikoura. And then she'll be taking the grapes and making wines out of these individual plants.
One plant tends to give you one bottle, so around about 800 grams, and that will give us enough juice in order to make the wine that we want.
After that, we'll be asking our very talented chemists to have a look and see how these wines might be different from a normal Pinot Noir.
So by the time she's finished, how many different varieties of wine will she have made from this vineyard?
We're looking at 50 this season, and around 6 to 8 weeks, we think we'll have something that we can start analysing.
Now, Ross, you and Philippa have just pulled up some of the bird netting, and we've got a closer look at the grapes, and they are quite small bunches, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Pinot itself is reasonably small bunched. I mean, Pinot actually comes from the pine cone shape. It's the French word, but that comes from the same root. So yes to that, but actually also if you look in front of you right now, we're looking at two plants here, and one of them you can see doesn't have very many berries on it at all, and the other one actually has quite large berries, and a large cluster, sorry, of berries. And this is just a fairly typical example of what we're seeing, where you get quite large differences in the way that these plants are growing.
Yeah, the grapes on the left-hand side are much smaller, and they don't look quite as healthy, do they?
No, they don't, and they actually look like, just looking at them, they look like they've developed at different speeds. So some of the grapes have actually gone right through and become raisins. Other ones are about harvest ripeness, and then we've got some that are small and they're still growing. So that's not a good characteristic. You want everything to be more or less mature at the same time. If you look at the right hand plant, you can see that's what it's doing. It's got all the berries at the same level of ripeness, and that would be a good clone.
Now, attached to the wire beside the plant we're looking at, there's a barcode. What information do you get from this barcode?
So we're taking measurements on these plants throughout the season. So we for each individual plant, we have something in the order of 700 measurements, if you actually include the chemistry that we've done on them as well. So there's a lot of information that goes back to a plant. The only way of handling that kind of thing over hundreds of plants is, thousands actually of plants, is using a computer system and a database. And the barcode takes us back to the plant field in the database. In other words, it's our way of always making sure that whatever information we put in goes in against the right plant, and we don't put a human in that place because there's too many chances for error. So that's all computerized, it's all been automated.
I think we're really lucky that we've started right at the beginning of a project, and we work on every phase of it, from developing the plants in the lab through to planting them out in the field and monitoring how the plants grow and seeing what chemical analysis gives us, what data. So we're really lucky in the sense that we really see the process from the start to the end. And it's a really neat feeling to be able to look down this vineyard row and say, yeah, we did this.
Philippa Barrell and Ross Bicknell at Plant and Food Research's Trial Vineyard. And Cosmo is hoping to catch up with the scientists again when the wine is made and ready for testing, to find out which plants have the most potential and should be developed further. And to have a taste, I'm sure.